This is Truth Frequency Radio.
No hate, no hype, no fear. Real people, real radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to your daily dose of deprogramming. My name is JD, and this is obviously your Red Pill Reports radio broadcast for the third day of December. And we are live, ladies and gentlemen, just like we are every day, Monday through Friday, from 10 o'clock until noon Central Standard Time. And that's what we try and do every day here. It'd be live, and we go over all the pertinent news of the day in the first hour. And then we always have a fantastic guest in the second hour today. Be no exception. We'll be joined by V, the Gorilla Economist. We're going to be talking about some of the clandestine activities that seem to be occurring in the banking industry, from stolen gold to murdered bankers. Probably talk a little bit about the failed Swiss referendum and also the coming shale oil collapse that we are seeing unfolding here in America right now. So do stay tuned at 11 o'clock for that. I want to thank everybody, obviously, for tuning in on a daily basis, making this show part of your daily news aggregation, and I want to give a special shout out and thank you to Bradley and Aaron Dakins, who invited me on to the Truth Traveler last night for a late show over on GCN. We had so much fun talking about music and frequency and just all kinds of really fascinating stuff. It was a fantastic show, and I really appreciate them inviting me on. I recommend everybody go and check that one out, because we did talk a lot about a lot of cool stuff. I want to remind everybody that if you would like to listen to the show, there's a couple different ways that you can do that. You can obviously go to truthfrequencyradio.com and find the live link button there. And when we are live, you can hit that, and we will be live for you. There are also Android and iPhone apps available that will pump any stream off of Truth Frequency right to your phones, which is great. But if you also maybe don't have unlimited data package and just want to use your minutes, you can dial in directly from your phone at 832-225-5308, and that will pump any of the shows from Truth Frequency right to your phone. I want to thank everybody also for continuing to support Truth Frequency and all the other hosts there. It's all hands on deck at this point, and any support that we can get from you guys for Truth Frequency, help us keep that network, the whole at the top of the top of the heap right now for alternative news and information, would be very awesome. I'm sure all the other hosts would appreciate that as well. So, without further ado, let's move on into the news, because there are a lot of things happening around the world right now. Probably the most important thing is a news article that just hit the wire very late last night, as Netanyahu has decided to dissolve the Israeli parliament. That is correct, ladies and gentlemen. He fired two of his top ministers early on Tuesday, and then Wednesday morning, and remember, they're a day ahead of us over there, they essentially began to put plans together. They passed a vote in the Knesset by 84-0, which is the first step in calling new parliamentary elections. Now, the elections are most likely going to occur in March, if it does follow through that the parliament is dissolved this week. So what is that going to mean? Difficult to say right now whether Netanyahu will be running the show by himself for a little while, which would be kind of scary. I consider this to he's pretty much just going full Sauron at this point, ladies and gentlemen. He's actually said, as part of this dissolvement of parliament, that he is tired of infighting and political agenda going on inside of his government. And I thought, man, isn't that kind of the whole point of a parliament, is that everybody has political viewpoints that they're able to express and then come to some kind of conclusion? Well, no more in Israel, ladies and gentlemen. That's not what they're looking for there. They want everybody to just agree right up front. So and also it's only 2 years since their last election. So very interesting that that just happened, as again, you know, just coming across the wire late last evening. We'll keep an eye on that and let you know what's going on there. One of the ISIS leaders, or the ISIS leader, Abu Baghdadi, his wife and child have been detained in Lebanon, according to reports from CNBC News. Let's see here. News of the arrest was initially reported by Reuters, which has said that the wife and the child were detained several days ago as they crossed into Lebanon from Syria. Syria's leading Al-Safir newspaper said the arrest was undertaken in coordination with foreign intelligence services and that Baghdadi's wife was traveling under a false identity. Now, a lot of people, there's very little known, actually. A lot of people don't know anything about Baghdadi because we rarely see him or rarely actually hear from him. There was an audio tape released by ISIS last month that was purportedly from him calling for volcanoes of jihad to erupt all over the world. But unfortunately, even less is known about his wife or whether he actually has more than one wife. So, again, don't really know, but his wife has been taken into custody with his child in Syria. So that happened just the other day. Let's see. Greek protesters are out in force in Athens right now. At least 15 people have been arrested after a peaceful support rally for a jailed hunger strike anarchist turned into a violent confrontation with police. Authorities ended up using tear gas and stun grenades to quell rioters carrying Molotov cocktails. There's a fantastic video. This is all hosted by Russia Today. And if you go to redpillreports.com and check out the show section, you'll be able to follow along with some of this news. But in this article, Greek protesters smash cars, clash with police in Athens, there's a great video, and it really shows the difference between what European protesters are capable of versus what American protesters are capable of. They estimated that between 8,000 and 10,000 protesters marched through central Athens shouting slogans in support of Nikos Romanos, who is the imprisoned anarchist who is also right now staging a hunger strike as he demands the right to be able to attend a university. And the anarchist march got very violent in the streets of downtown Athens just the last two nights. Protesters have been smashing cars, setting fire to bins, burning cars, and erecting barricades on several streets in the popular neighborhoods. At least 10 cars have been overturned, with five of them being completely destroyed. And some of the videos are astounding. The effort that these people are putting into their protest is second to nothing I've ever seen in the world. So Athens definitely going through a lot right now. Probably not going to be the last time either. A close encounter caught on video this time between a NATO's F-16 and a Russian MiG-31. This clip was just released yesterday by the Norwegian Armed Forces. It's a very short clip. It actually only shows the cockpit perspective from the NATO plane. And it's, as I said, only about 15 seconds long. But essentially, the NATO plane is flying around, and you can hear the NATO pilot in the F-16 utter a colorful euphemism, we'll say, and then quickly move the aircraft, you know, from right to left as a MiG-31 apparently is in front of this guy and apparently is getting a little too close for comfort. It's a little unusual, though, because, you know, A, we're talking about international airspace. So who's really the, you know, causing the conflict here? Was it Russia, you know, in a pilot error as he kind of drifted over in front of the Norwegian plane? Or was it perhaps the Norwegian plane pushing his limits as he's trying to get too close to the Russian plane? And, you know, you don't have to be an insurance detective to look at the video and say, well, you know, I know if I'm in a car accident, it's usually the car behind that it's at fault for causing some sort of scene or some sort of, you know, dangerous situation. So in international airspace, I'm kind of leaning more towards Norway being the aggressor here. But who knows? It's probably just more rhetoric. You know, NATO has been coming out, especially at the behest of Norway, specifically talking about all these interactions between Russian planes and NATO planes. So More par for that. Par for the course, I guess. There you go. The Mexicans right now are marching against the president, again, as fresh graves are discovered. And we're obviously talking about the situation with the 43 students that went disappearing, that disappeared in Guerrero State. I watched an amazing documentary about this that Vice did just this weekend, and I was not aware of the fact that all of the bodies that they have found in those mass graves, none of them, not one of them, DNA-wise, correlates to any of the missing 43 students, which is why there's so much protest right now, because the families of these students went to the government and said, you know, we gave you guys, your law enforcement officials took our people, took our kids away from us. It's now your responsibility to bring them back to us alive. If the state took them away, the state's responsibility is to bring them back alive. And that's why so many people are upset, because the state has essentially said, well, we believe, you know, that it was these, the bodies were found in the mass graves burned by the river and things like that. But again, the DNA testing has not been conclusive. People are still very, very upset. And it's at the point now where, you know, we had the article the other day about the president of Mexico essentially dissolving all of the municipal police departments. And perhaps that's going to be a good step, but it doesn't seem like that's the right step according to the people there. They're very, very upset, and they're demanding for him to step down, which I would fully support. He's obviously not done anything for these people, and I would fully support that at this point. So let's see. The U.S. is making claims now that it understands that Iran is also bombing areas of Iraq where the extremist group Islamic State is operating. And this is according to a defense official. But the United States is not going to respond to Tehran's presence unless there is an immediate threat to the United States forces. So this is kind of unusual. He goes on to say, you know, we are aware. I wouldn't say we're necessarily concerned, but we have our eyes on it. And this is what the official is saying. Talking about the fact that Iran is bombing targets inside of Iraq close to its own border. Very unusual situation here that we are essentially, you know, we're teaming up with Iraq, but not in any kind of controlled fashion. So my enemy of my enemy is my friend kind of stuff going on here, but also kind of unusual that we're only concerned about it or just keeping an eye on it. So there you go, keeping an eye on Iran as they are bombing Iraq. Good Lord, what are we going to do about that? I don't know. Okay. according to Blacklisted News, this is a fairly significant story also. In the last 6 months since Thailand's military coup, the United States has exported tens of millions of dollars worth of military equipment to the unelected government there. In the 6 months since Thailand's military coup, as I said, the United States has exported tens of millions of dollars worth of military equipment to the unelected government. This finding is based on new analysis of the U.S. Census Bureau export data conducted by Truthout. The records, which run through September, show that since the May 22, 2014 coup, the United States has delivered $11 million in parts for military aircraft, more than $1 million in parts for guided missiles, and three UH-60 Black Hawk helicopters worth more than $40 million. The Thai military government, which calls itself the National Council for Peace and Order, has maintained widespread censorship on television, radio, in print, and in social media. It has also outlawed criticism of the military authorities as well as gatherings of more than five people. The NCPO has also detained more than 300 politicians, activists, journalists, and demonstrators since the coup. Many are being held incommunicado at military base sites, and some are even alleging torture. In August, the leader of the military, General Chan Ocha, was appointed the country's prime minister by a legislative body that he himself handpicked. And General Pruyuth is suggested that democratic elections may not actually occur until 2016. The U.S. arms deliveries have continued despite the Thai military's history of violent repression. And in 2010, the Thai military opened fire during a crackdown on opposition protests calling for new elections. Both Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch criticized the military actions, which killed scores of people and left hundreds of other people injured. And when Truthout asked about the continued delivery of U.S. arms to Thailand, A government spokesman replied in an email that the United States reviews all requests for security assistance on a case-by-case basis, taking into account political, military, economic, arms control, and human rights conditions in making decisions on the provision of military equipment and the licensing of direct commercial sales to any country. So, did that happen in this particular case? It looks like we are once again completely ignoring, the national sentiment on human rights across the planet. And, you know, par for the course, that's what we do. So we don't ask questions, we just sell the weapons, ladies and gentlemen. That's how we make our money. An Egyptian militant organization aligned with the Islamic State has claimed responsibility for killing an American oil worker. His name was William Henderson. He worked for the Houston-based energy company Apache Corporation, and he was killed in Egypt's western desert on August 6. We're just now getting reports out because the militant organization Al-Maqdis, which now has changed its name yet again to the Sinai Province, has claimed responsibility now for Henderson's death on its official Twitter account late on Sunday, and it also published pictures of his passport and two identification cards. It goes on to say that he was a member of the Apache team over in Egypt for more than 26 years. So our thoughts and prayers obviously go out to him. There's a huge story coming out of the UK right now on the Mirror, essentially outlining events that took place as an abused teenage boy inside of Buckingham Palace and Balmoral Castle, and also linking his abuse to what they are calling a VIP pedophile ring. And I'm not making this up, but there are some pretty chilling claims coming out from this young man who was working there at Buckingham Palace. And his parents have said that he has disclosed all kinds of horrible things that have gone on, and they are going on to make a major investigation. Obviously, the media there is downplaying it. They're saying it's not a big deal, and it's all unsubstantiated claims. But this is not the first time we've heard about pedophile rings coming out of high places in the UK. So we'll keep an eye on that as well. Moving into some national news right now. And a quick story here, Ashton Carter, who is the former second-in-command at the Pentagon, appears to be the top choice to replace outgoing Secretary Chuck Hagel. Barring any last-minute complications, Ash Carter will be the President Barack Obama's choice as the new Secretary of Defense, several U.S. administration officials told CNN. So what is Carter all about? I have no idea. I know he is one of these guys that does not actually have any direct military experience, so kind of interesting that he would be moved up to the Secretary of Defense. But Hagel out the door, Ashton Carter moving in, they probably will be making that official later this week. And then obviously Hagel is going to stay on board until his successor is confirmed by the Senate. Not sure when that's going to happen exactly, so we'll keep you up to date on that. Detroit had a major power outage yesterday, kind of an unusual event. Essentially, the entire city of Detroit lost power. Everything from police departments to schools, traffic lights, all kinds of city-run facilities. And what's interesting about it is, A, it's just 15 months after Detroit's blackout back in 2013, but now DTE, which is the Detroit Energy Department, came out and they said essentially that a major cable failure was what was responsible for the grid going down. I wasn't really necessarily under the impression that one single cable was what they were using to bring all that power into Detroit. I would think they'd want to diversify maybe just a little bit, but I'm not an engineer, so it's hard to say. But I kind of believe that that isn't exactly the most accurate description of what happened in Detroit yesterday. So there's some fantastic pictures of people milling about in dark buildings and whatnot over on Zero Hedge. We have also hosted that at redpillreports.com, so you can check that out. I've got some good news coming out of Florida. We've been talking about the 90-year-old World War II veteran Arnold Abbott, who was obviously captured a lot of global attention last month when he defied city ordinances passed in October that prohibited feeding homeless people in the city without permits and toilet facilities, which essentially made the process illegal. Police repeatedly issued Abbott with citations and video recorded his group feedings homeless people, which prompted major public relations backlash for the city. Abbott, who's been feeding the homeless for 23 years, previously won a lawsuit back in 2000, which overturned a ban on feeding homeless people on the beach, an outcome now authorities claim is superseded by the new city ordinance, which passed in October. But essentially, the matter right now is heading for mediation, and a Broward County judge, Thomas Lynch, ruled just yesterday that there would be no more arrest or citation for violating the ordinance of for the next 30-day period. So Abbott and others are facing right now $500 fines and 60 days in jail if the city chooses to pursue charges. But right now, Judge Thomas Lynch has put a stop to the city arresting or giving any more citations out for people feeding the homeless. So hopefully this whole thing will get squashed and go away, and the city of Fort Lauderdale will collectively pull their heads from their hineys and realize, isn't it amazing that it's always, they have plenty of time, and people, governments are perfectly willing to consent and oversee, you know, the vast welfare state that essentially keeps people below the poverty line. But the notion of fellow citizens helping each other out, that's just something that we can't tolerate here. You know, that's just unbelievable to me. So hopefully we'll get through all of that. Eric Holder in the news again today. I was hoping he would be going away, but he's still not gone yet. He said on Monday he is going to soon release new guidelines to limit racial profiling by federal law enforcement agencies, a move long awaited by civil rights advocates. He actually announced his plan at the Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta, where this 1960s civil rights leader, Martin Luther King Jr., was known to preach. He said he is going to announce the guidelines in the coming days as part of Barack Obama's response to the tension between law enforcement and minority communities that the offense like Ferguson obviously exposed. According to Holder, these new guidelines will not pertain to local or state law enforcement, such as Ferguson Police Department. But Holder and civil rights advocates have said that the federal guidelines will set examples for local agencies. So Holder coming out, trying to keep the fire going on the Ferguson situation, but not actually doing anything about it, apparently. Who cares if they do federal regulations if it doesn't affect anybody locally? And then speaking of locally, we're talking about grand jury stuff again. The New York grand jury is quietly nearing a decision in the case that has drawn a lot of comparisons to the police killing of Michael Brown here in Ferguson. The panel on the Staten Island heard testimony last week from a police officer involved in the chokehold death of Eric Garner, and he was believed to be the last witness at this grand jury. So the Staten Island District Attorney won't comment on the proceedings, but they will determine whether the officer will face criminal charges, and they do say that an announcement is expected before the end of the year. Obviously, this goes back to Garner, who is 43, a father of six. He died during an arrest in July for allegedly selling loose, untaxed cigarettes, a crime for which there is not a death penalty that is carried with that. So a widely watched amateur video shows one of the arresting officers wrapping his arms around Garner's neck as he's taken to the ground, while Garner is heard saying over and over, "I can't breathe." The New York City Medical Examiner's Office found Garner's death was caused by compression of chest and neck and his prone positioning during the physical restraint by the police. His manner of death was ruled as a homicide, and chokeholds are banned under New York Police Department policy. So in the wake of Garner's death, the New York Police Commissioner Bill Bratton vowed to retrain officers on the use of force. And following the incident, two NYPD officers, including Officer Pantaleo, the one who allegedly put his arms around Garner's neck, he was placed on desk duty, and four emergency workers involved in the medical response for Garner were also suspended without pay pending the investigation. Officer Pantaleo now has been sued by three men in federal court over allegedly unlawful and racially motivated arrests just in the last 2 years. And following Garner's death, the NYPD says it has now stripped Pantaleo of his gun and his badge. So is the situation in New York going to unfold the way it did here in Ferguson? I don't know. I'm thinking that this one may go in the opposite direction, I think. But at the same time, we know the agenda is to divide and conquer. We know that the Ferguson situation was definitely a nurtured event, and there were certainly a lot of instances of A team versus B team, and seeing that in the media But I can't imagine that the people in New York would want to see incidents like what happened in Ferguson unfold in New York, because that would just be such a much larger issue. So I would hope for public safety and the fact that we already know that Garner's death was ruled as a homicide, that they should probably just go ahead and get this guy charged and get him off of the police force, especially given his police record in the last 2 years of already being sued by three other people. Just crazy, you know what I mean? Just crazy. So, okay, that's pretty much everything that's going on in the national news now. Let's go move on and see what is going on in the economy here. Markets were fairly flat. I think when we opened, they're still fairly flat right now, only down about not even a full point. So about as flat as you can possibly be. Dow is right now sitting at 17,879. Let's move on and check out the metal prices here quickly. If my computer will keep up, gold bumping up a little bit today to 1210, silver sitting at 1653. We're obviously going to have V the Gorilla Economist on in the next half hour, but 11 o'clock Central Time. And we're going to be talking about all kinds of things economic, I am sure. So probably the first and foremost thing to talk about with the economy is the wonderful fact that the national debt has now finally broached $18 trillion. That's right. That is a 70% increase in just the last 6 years, which does happen to correlate to the amount of time Barack Obama has been in office. So 70% increase in the national debt just over the last 6 years. That is a 10.6%. No, I'm sorry. It was $10.6 trillion when Obama took office. So just unbelievable that we are here now, especially given the fact that Obama himself has said that it was unpatriotic and irresponsible to add a mere $4 trillion to the debt. So now, by his own measure, we've reached a new level of irresponsibility. That is fantastic. Keep it right here, guys. We have a three-minute break. We're going to be back, get into some more economic news, and we've got a lot of health and science tech stuff to go over today, too. So keep it right here. This is your Daily Dose of Deprogramming. I'm JD, and I'll be right back, guys. Keep it right here.
So you want the news and information without the hate, the hype, the fear? Well, you've come to the right place. You can support Truth Frequency Radio by spreading the word on social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, or your favorite forums. Want to take Truth Frequency Radio on the road? Listen on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or other mobile devices. Want more than just the free stuff? Sign up for a VIP membership for as little as $4 a month and get super high-quality downloads, member-only content, and instant access to your favorite shows without the wait. It's only through your loving support that we're able to cover the cost and continue broadcasting. So now, stay tuned for more Free Speech Radio right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. KTFRN, worldwide.
A sudden change in the wind. The day grows dark as ominous clouds move in and lightning begins to carve arcs in the sky. And you realize you are not prepared.
I am telling you, yes, take cover.
The number of intense storms is increasing exponentially in the U.S. Tornadoes, hurricanes, flooding, and droughts are happening with greater magnitude and frequency. If you are choosing to rely on the government to save you,
and no one's coming to help them,
you could be dead wrong. The first step towards self-reliance in the face of disaster is a visit to MyPatriotSupply.com. There you'll find the absolute best prices on storable foods, non-GMO seeds, emergency water filtration devices, and so much more. All orders over $49 qualify for free shipping in the lower 48. Visit us online or call 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. And speak to one of our preparedness advisors today. Remember, before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Sure, I'm glad I tried that new Iodine Now microplant powder formulation.
You liked it, huh? I told you it would change your life.
Yeah, I feel fantastic, and I have so much more energy.
Hi, I have your Iodine Now delivery.
Oh, yes, my second order arrived. Thank you so much.
Hey, buddy, why don't you ask this lady out for a date?
Good idea. Now that I'm taking Iodine Now, I have the energy to enjoy my life again.
It looks like you're getting back your old charm, buddy.
I'd love to go out to dinner with you. And can I try some of the iodine now?
Of course you can. You just delivered me a one-year supply. Your future looks really great. I finally agree with you.
Iodine Now, part of the Micro Plant Powder family. Micro Plant Powder is available in 15 different formulations. Call 888-910-4367 or visit the website to find the one that's right for you. And listen to our new audio descriptions for every product only at MUSA.org.
Lip-Free FM with Nathan Frazier.
Sundays on True Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys for sticking with us through that three-minute break. Without you, the listener, I would just be sitting here talking to myself. So it's very, very, I'm very thankful that you guys are all out there paying attention to the gibberish that comes out of my mouth. We're talking right now about the national debt passing the $18 trillion mark, obviously sparking a lot of renewed criticism this week from Republicans and other fiscal conservatives over the soaring trajectory of the government spending under Barack Obama. Now, this federal debt, which again topped $18 trillion, is actually the sum of two different numbers. The first one is $12.92 trillion, and that's public debt, which consists of all the outstanding treasury bills, notes, and bonds held by individuals, corporations, foreign governments, and others. The second is $5.08 trillion in so-called intergovernmental holdings, which are special securities held by the U.S. government trust funds and special funds, or basically IOUs from the federal government for money that it borrowed from Social Security and Medicare. So $18 trillion, we are there, and if you're watching the debt clock right now, it doesn't seem to be slowing down any, despite all the rhetoric coming from the fiscal conservative side. Probably not going to be slowing down with that spending anytime soon. Let's see here. Bitcoin is absolutely exploding in Australia, and people, and by people I mean the investors, and not the investors, excuse me, the government and people who want to see Bitcoin go away are starting to get pretty concerned about it. A top Australian law enforcement agency right now is actually investigating Bitcoin's role in organized crime, according to a senior official there. Just as politicians and financial regulators are starting to embrace the digital currency as part of legitimate modern business. So there are new efforts right now to regulate Bitcoin. They are also essentially blaming Bitcoin for all kinds of horrible things, organized crime, illicit commodity trading, child exploitation, all kinds of stuff. They're basically going to say, well, Bitcoin makes those things more possible. They actually went as far as to shut down one of the ATMs that was installed in Australia because they were saying that a biker group was using the ATM, the Bitcoin ATM, to fund the purchase of methamphetamines. So again, Bitcoin really having a difficult time figuring out which side of the fence it is going to be on. You know, and it's unusual to see essentially a global currency, you know, affecting different countries in different ways as each country tries to figure out the best way to deal with Bitcoin. But I think overall, the rollout of Bitcoin is not going to go away anytime soon. So again, I'm still pretty bullish on Bitcoin right now. Speaking about oil, and again, we're going to have V the Gorilla Economist on in the next hour, so we'll be speaking quite a bit about the coming shale collapse, which I think is probably, we just stepped over that cliff here the last few days, and I think in the next 3 to 6 months, there's going to be a lot of ramifications that have to do with this suppressed oil price. But, you know, whether or not that oil price is going to change has been the subject of a lot of conjecture recently. Obviously, there was the big OPEC meeting back on Thursday of last week where they decided that they were not going to be cutting production. But now a Saudi Arabia, one of the Saudi Arabia's most influential royal princes, who is Turki Al Saud, has said that the kingdom will only now consider cutting oil production if Iran, Russia, and the U.S. agree to match those cuts because it wants to protect its market share. And he was speaking in London when he said this. The prince, who is a senior Saudi royal and the former head of the country's spy agency, said that the kingdom would not repeat previous mistakes of surrendering its share of the global market for crude to its rivals. His remarks come days after a controversial meeting at the OPEC, when the group appeared to be split over a decision to keep productions at a current level. So what you can see, and if you read into that, is that we are not going to see Saudi Arabia cut their production at all. And because obviously they're hinging it on whether or not Russia, Nigeria, and Iran and the U.S. are going to do the same thing, which we obviously are not going to do either, because that's pretty much the only industry here in the United States anymore is energy. So what's that mean for oil prices going forward? Probably going to be stagnant, if not in that $65 range, because Saudi Arabia seems pretty content to just keep it there right now. City of Chicago is expecting now to vote on a proposal by Mayor Rahm Emanuel to raise the minimum wage to $13 an hour over the next 4 years. His measure to boost the minimum wage from the current $8.25 an hour follows similar actions by other cities such as Seattle and San Francisco. The mayor felt the need to move on a minimum wage proposal now to get ahead of possible action by state lawmakers who could vote to raise the minimum wage to $10 an hour, according to Crane Chicago Business. And a state law could actually prevent cities from passing higher wage increases after the fact. This proposal in Chicago would affect about 410,000 city workers and add $800 million to the Chicago economy, which is clearly the only reason that they would do this, is to increase their tax revenues and increase spending as you start putting more money into the people's hands. Retail apocalypse. This is a story coming for the economic collapse. We had the story yesterday about the just absolutely dismal retail sales numbers over the Thanksgiving holiday being down 11% from last year. And also the ridiculous story about the fact that the reason that people didn't spend any money, according to the Wall Street Journal and you know, very smart people there, were because people don't feel the same psychological need to rush out and get a great deal this weekend, particularly if they expected there to be more good deals, you know, further on. He also goes on to say that the holiday season and the weekend are a marathon and not a sprint. So there you really have it. An 11% collapse in retail spending has just been spun by the Wall Street Journal as super bullish for the U.S. economy because U.S. consumers are not spending money because the economy is just too strong. And the only reason they don't spend is because they're going to spend a whole lot more later or something to that effect. But I think that what we'll talk about, again, we'll talk to V here in a little while. I think the retail sales numbers are startling, and I think that as this week goes on, as we move toward Christmas, you know, obviously this is the make or break time for a lot of companies out there, and I'm very interested at the first of the year to see what those companies are going to be doing, such as Kmart and Sears and Radio Shack. I mean, Radio Shack this year didn't even have, they were not able to get enough capital together to actually close their stores. That's how poor Radio Shack is right now. They couldn't pull enough funding together to close down their stores. That's how bad it is. So we'll see. Again, I think after Christmas, we'll really have some key indicators about what the retail market is doing. But perhaps it's true. Perhaps the economy is just so strong and people just have so much money that they're not concerned about going out and saving a bunch over this last weekend. I think that's silly. Let's see here. We had that announcement about gold being completely vaporized from the Ukraine. The central bank's head, Mrs. Gontareva, basically came out this week and said that the reserves which were supposed to be nationally at about 9% were actually down to about 1%. And then we had that follow-up story, which kind of clarified exactly what had happened, is that the United States came over and stole all that gold. But a lawsuit has now been fired in Ukraine against this woman and against the central bank, because people have looked into exactly how that transaction took place, and she essentially made a transaction that was so poor that she lost about 19 kopecks per U.S. dollar, kopecks being the local commodity there, the local currency there, losing some significant value against the dollar directly because of this woman's desire to sell gold reserves at a very reduced cost. So people in Ukraine obviously very upset now, and they're going to take her to tax on this issue. The main issue is that Ukraine, under the Constitution, it's the central bank that's in charge of maintaining the country's gold reserves. So the fact that she made some sort of illicit bargains off the record here and got rid of all her gold reserves without any accountability is a big, 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 big no-no. So people in Ukraine, very upset, finally stepping up to do something about that. Again, we'll probably talk quite a bit more about that coming up in the next hour. Moving on to some science and tech news. Very interesting story about the first spacecraft that is ever going to visit Pluto. It is set to wake up on the 6th of December in preparation for its midsummer rendezvous with the solar system's most famous dwarf planet. The New Horizons spacecraft has been speeding towards Pluto for almost 9 years. It has covered 2.9 billion miles. And to conserve energy and general wear and tear, the spacecraft has gone into intermittent hibernation, often for months at a time, slumbering for a total of 5 years. While sleeping, it was almost completely shut down, maintaining only enough power to send a weekly beep home telling mission controllers that it was doing just fine. But now it is go time. The systems, the spacecraft systems are programmed to start up again on the 6th of December at 12 o'clock noon. And an hour and a half later, it will begin sending signals back to Earth to confirm that it is awake. But because it's so far away, it's going to take more than 4 hours for the mission control to reach, for the message to reach mission control. And then at about 6:30 p.m., mission controllers will start their 6 weeks worth of checks to make sure all of the spacecraft systems are functional and prepare for its final approach towards Pluto. What's really interesting about this is that when the spacecraft launched back in 2006, Pluto was still considered to be a real planet and the only one not to have been visited by any spacecraft. But later that year, the International Astronomical Union voted to reclassify Pluto as a dwarf planet. But at the time of the launch, Pluto was known to have three moons, Charon, discovered in 78, Nyxa, and Hydra, both spotted in 2005. And then in 2011, scientists found two more, Kerbos and Styx, respectively, giving New Horizons even more places to explore. One of the mission's goals is to see whether Pluto has any more companions and to see if it has a ring system. Astronomers using the Hubble Space Telescope haven't seen anything yet, but that doesn't mean there aren't more moons and rings too small and faint to detect. So very cool, more interesting science stuff. We'll probably get some new insight into what Pluto is actually about. Maybe they'll take pity on it and reclassify it as a planet again. I don't know. Out of Boston, and according to Reuters, security researchers have said they have now uncovered a cyber espionage ring focused on stealing corporate secrets for the purpose of gaming the stock market in an operation that has compromised sensitive data about dozens of publicly held companies. The cybersecurity firm FireEye Inc., which disclosed the operation on Monday, said that since the middle of the year, the group has attacked email accounts at more than 100 firms, most of them being pharmaceutical and healthcare companies. Victims include firms in other sectors as well as corporate advisors, including investment bankers, attorneys, and investor relation firms, according to FireEye. The cybersecurity firm declined to identify any of the victims specifically. It said it did not know whether any trades were actually made based on the stolen data. Now, still, FireEye's threat intelligence manager, Jen Whedon, said that the hackers only targeted people with access to highly insider data that could be used to profit on trades before that data was made to the public. They sought data that included drafts of U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission filings, documents on merger activities, discussions of legal cases, and board planning documents and medical research results, according to, again, the head of the threat intelligence at FireEye. So a lot of very interesting things being stolen by this cyber ring, and they don't give any indication as to whether or not any actual insider trading took place. But again, given the quality and quantity of the information it does seem kind of likely that that probably did actually happen. Germany right now, back in the news, is planning on banning or is attempting to ban after-hours phone calls from work. I kind of like this idea. Now, Germany already mandates a slew of labor policies that are pretty good. They have a minimum of 24 paid vacation days a year plus holidays and 14 weeks of paid maternity. But Germans actually refer to the close of business as Feierabend, which is a word I can't really say, but it literally translates to something akin to party night. And now some in Germany want to impose a strict work communications blackout during this sacred time. So the recently proposed no work communications after work, after hours regulations would forbid employers from conducting or contacting their employees via email or phone past their scheduled working hours. Kind of unusual, an unusual development there in Germany. It's going to have, it could have good effects, could have bad effects. I mean, there's a lot of people who like to take time off work to go deal with their kids, go to a soccer game and something like that, and are more than happy to make up for work after hours. So, you know, if a law came into effect that limited people's ability to do that, it might be a bad thing. But at the same time, you know, sometimes it's good to get away from work. And if you need, if you're one of those people, maybe you've got a boss that just hounds you all the time, I don't know, maybe it would be good to have a law that says you're just not going to contact me after work. Anyway, moving on, the FBI has now issued a flash warning to provide businesses with an indication that there is a another instance of destructive malware going around right now. Okay, so hackers have been using this malicious software to launch destructive attacks inside the United States. And this is obviously following the devastating cyber attack against Sony last week. So the FBI released a five-page confidential flash warning issued to businesses late on Monday to provide some technical details about the malicious software that was used in that attack, although it did not actually name the victim. The FBI usually issues these flash warnings to provide businesses with details about emerging cyber threats and to help them defend against the new types of attacks. But again, no indication about who the victims were at a target of this new warning coming out from the FBI. So there is that as well. Let's move here quickly to, we'll talk about a little bit of health news today. There's some pretty amazing stuff going on right now. A new study funded by the National Institute of Health is actually unraveling the mystery of how blue light from residential and commercial lighting, electronic devices, and outdoor lights can throw off kilter the natural body clock of humans, which is called your circadian rhythm, can also affect plants and animals and can lead to disease. So at the right time of day, blue light is actually a pretty good thing. It talks to our 24-hour circadian clock. It talks to our bodies, for example, telling them when to wake up, when to eat, and when to carry out specific metabolic functions. But in plants, blue lights signal them to leaf out, to grow, to blossom, and to bloom. And in animals, it aids in migratory patterns, sleep and wake cycles, and regulation of metabolism, as well as regulating the mood and the immune system. But new research is now indicating that too much blue light, especially at the wrong time, can throw off your biological signaling and result in disease. Because a lot of people don't understand that you can go longer without food and water than you can without sleep. Sleep is probably the most important component to your well-being, and one that most people don't take into consideration. But too much blue light, again, you know, if you're institute a policy of turning all your electronics off before you go to bed. Same thing with kids. There's even a lot of indication that artificial light from night lights can affect circadian rhythms and affect children even more than adults. So definitely something to be aware of. Especially now that there is more scientific evidence backing that up. What happens when you drink 10 cans of Coke a day, every day for a month? Well, you don't die, apparently. But so 10 years ago, in 2004, there was a documentary guy named Morgan Spurlock who decided to see what would happen if he ate nothing but McDonald's food every day for 30 days. I'm sure many of you remember that. He consumed over 5,000 calories a day, and by the end of it, he had gained 24 pounds. His body mass index had increased 13%. He reported mood swings and sexual dysfunction. It also took him 14 months to return back to normal. So why would anybody want to repeat such an unhealthy experiment? I don't know. I don't really care. It's not really my reasoning here to figure out why. The point is that this guy actually did drink. His name's George Preer. He drank 10 cans of Coke every day, and he took a picture and did daily videos to see what would happen to him. Surprisingly or unsurprisingly, the guy who was gym-toned, He put on 2 stone in weight, which is about 30 pounds. He saw his blood pressure rise to an unhealthy 145 over 96. And he also reported strong cravings for more sugar, even though he was consuming 350 grams of sugar a day just from his Coke intake alone. He goes on to say that he did the experiment to get people thinking and talking about how much sugar they eat and how unhealthy it actually is, as people need to be more aware of the real and powerful damaging effects on sugar and what it does to their health. He goes on to say he does not think he would like to do it again because he doesn't like being this heavy. But there are a side-by-side picture from the month when he started and when he ended, and he does not look healthy. I'm just going to say that. Don't drink 10 cans of Coke. Don't drink any Coke. The pH on a Coke is like 3. Why would you put that in your body? That's just crazy. Just crazy. Let's see. What else is going on in the world? According to a hospital in Geneva, the experimental vaccine against the deadly Ebola virus has provoked only mild side effects in the volunteers. Of course, volunteers right now undergoing trials in Switzerland at a Geneva hospital. They say to date, no major side effects have been observed after the injections. This hospital in Geneva, which is the Geneva University Hospital, is one of the several worldwide hosting sites for trials of the experimental Ebola vaccine manufactured by the Public Health Agency of Canada and licensed by the U.S. firm New Link Genetics. It has said that 34 of the 115 volunteers taking part in the clinical trial have already received injections with either the Ebola vaccine or with a placebo, and observations and initial analysis showed that the vaccinated volunteers responded only with an inflammatory reaction, which is exactly what they expected. They said that that lasted from a few hours to a couple of days with a mild fever, and the clinical trials will continue until early 2015, with around 15 volunteers receiving an injection every single week. Now, right now, there currently is no licensed treatment or vaccine for Ebola, and the World Health Organization has endorsed rushing potential ones through trials in a bid to stem the epidemic, raging mainly in Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone. Right now, some 6,000 people have died so far from the outbreak that started a year ago. But that number might actually be a little bit low, according to a report from Natural News. Natural News says, though, even though Ebola is not in the headlines very much today, the Ebola outbreak in West Africa is actually worsening, with the number of infected people and the number of people killed by the disease being dramatically underreported. In fact, as noted by Britain's Guardian newspaper, the number of people in West Africa who have contracted the disease has now risen to well above 16,000 and the death toll to nearly 7,000, according to the WTO, which warns that those figures are most likely probably low. The number of deaths is more than 1,000 higher than the figure issued by the WHO just a couple of days ago, but it's thought to include deaths that have been gone unreported in weeks or months since the outbreak began, and most of the new deaths are now being recorded in Liberia. And again, the WHO officials have warned that the agency's figures are most likely being significantly understated. That's because reliable data from the outbreak has been spotty at best, and totals often rise a great deal when the information backlogs are actually cleared. The latest confirmed figures indicate that nearly half of those who have known to been infected with the deadly virus have actually passed away. There was also an indication in a report yesterday that a hospital in Boston is potentially right now monitoring somebody who is thought to potentially have Ebola. They are monitoring him right now. He came into the hospital just yesterday. So Ebola out of the news cycle, but it doesn't seem to be out of the news. You know, being prepared right now and paying attention to what is going on in the Ebola market or the Ebola world, definitely very, very important. Banned DNA kits are now on sale in the UK. We're talking about a highly controversial DNA testing kit that has gone sale in the UK, the service which allows users to diagnose the personal risk of developing life-threatening diseases by analyzing their DNA, was actually banned in the United States back in 2013. The 23andMe Personal Genome Service allows users to understand the probability of contracting hereditary conditions such as sickle cell anemia, breast cancer, and Parkinson's by locating the genetic markers associated with the illness. But back in when it was released in 2008, the PGS was actually awarded Invention of the Year by Time Magazine for pioneering retail genomics. But following numerous warnings by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, it was actually banned in 2013 for failure to comply with regulatory requirements. Now, the kit only costs about £125. It allows customers to send and receive information from the privacy of your own home, and it organizes a sampling kit to be dispatched to home addresses, and then the samples themselves go off to the Netherlands for testing. Now, do you really want to send your genetic makeup to a private company? There's a lot of speculation about whether or not its actual diagnosis is accurate enough to base any kind of medical conditions or medical decisions on, which is one of the reasons the FDA decided that they weren't going to allow it in our country. So given the fact that you might not actually be able to get real valid information from it, I have to wonder about what the motivation is behind a company who wants to cultivate everyone's DNA and what they might decide to do with it after the fact. So for me personally, not going to go be using one of these DNA kits. If you do live in the UK and you see one of those and decide to use it, love to know what your experience is with it. But I personally am not going to be going that way. So let's talk about six herbs that will help boost your brain power. How about periwinkle and ginseng? Both of those herbs been proved to improve cognitive function. They've all been studied by the universities in England and have both been together proven to boost cognitive function. Vincristine, which is extracted actually from periwinkle, is a natural constituent, one of the most powerful anti-cancer drugs in the world, but also significantly increases the survival rate for acute childhood leukemia, also another one that can reduce brain tumors. Go to Cola. Again, if you guys want to follow along, you can go to redpillreports.com. This stuff is all in the health section today. Go to Cola, another one to boost your brain. Smelling rosemary, one that they're going to include in this list. And the ginkgo biloba, again, probably one of the most well-known herbs to help regenerate brain cells. Lots of other news I could not get to today, but we are getting ready to go to our three-minute break, and then when we come back, we'll be joined by V the Gorilla Economist, and that will be very, very good. So keep it right here, you guys. Three-minute break. When we come back, we'll be getting into some clandestine banking operations and things like that. This is your Daily Dose of Deprogramming. Keep it right here, guys.
Haven't you always wanted your very own Truth Frequency Radio bumper sticker? To get the word out about the fastest growing news talk outlet in the independent media? Joe Joseph here for TruthFrequencyRadio.com. KTFRN and LibertyStickers.com have teamed up to give you your very own Truth Frequency Radio bumper sticker. For free! Just go to TruthFrequencyRadio.com/stickers today. And don't forget to visit our friends at LibertyStickers.com, home of the world's most dangerous bumper stickers. Their vast selection and quality of stickers are second to none. TruthFrequencyRadio.com, because silence is consent.
Archaeology, astronomy, alchemy, secrets of the Holy Bible, hidden codes of the Quran, demonology, Tesla technology, solar power, extraterrestrials in the ancient world. More than 500 documentaries, an experimental film lab of cutting-edge music and art, full-length movies, conference reports, and weekly TV shows. The Enigma Channel is the world's first truly global TV station. www.enigmatv.com. Intelligent television for planet Earth.
After work, I'm so tired that I want to be left alone to sleep.
Hey, listen to me.
Who are you?
I'm you years ago, when you felt healthy and young and everything worked on your body. Do you remember that?
Yes. I wish I felt like that now.
You can feel like that again with a new microplant powder formulation called Iodine Now. It cleans the entire body from head to toe and feeds the body what it really needs. You'll be in a better mood and you'll find more drive in your romantic life. Really? I gotta try Iodine Now and feel good again. It also protects you from radiation, heavy metals, fluoride, chlorine, and bromine, including cancer and most major diseases. You'll be amazed. You can be your own doctor. I want to keep you out of the hospital and off pharmaceuticals. Wow, why are you so nice to me? Because I'm you. You're out of shape, and I need a better-looking future.
Call 888-910-4367. That's 888-910-4367. Iodine Now. Only at HempUSA.org.
Real people. Real radio. Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. It is straight up 11 o'clock Central Time, and we are live. It is the third day of December, and I'm very excited to be joined today by the one and only V, the Gorilla Economist, probably one of my all-time favorite guests that I've spoken with, both on and off air, just super entertaining and very, very insightful gentleman here. And for those of you guys who don't know V, the Gorilla Economist, his website is roguemoney.net. He also hosts a weekly show. I believe that's on Friday nights, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct, V?
Absolutely. Friday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, freedomslips.com.
Awesome. Okay, so, and again, for those of you guys who don't know V, he has worked for some of the top commodity trader firms and investment banks in the world. He's also contributed to private think tanks that help create investment policy. His track record is uncanny. He's very well documented on his appearances with Steve Quayle and Doug Hagman. V actually predicted with very pinpoint accuracy the play-by-play of the Eurozone crisis, and he was also the first to warn about Japan's disastrous economic policies and how this would be the first domino that could actually gravely affect the global economy. So in that vein, it's, you know, very, very exciting to have him join us today, talk about some of the ridiculous things that are going on in the economic system right now. V, I don't even know where to start. I mean, just what we haven't spoken, I guess it's probably been a couple of weeks now.
But, yeah.
Okay, let's just go over some of the small events. Let's see, we hit $18 trillion on the debt, right? We see most likely the coming collapse of the shale industry here in the United States.
Oh, yeah.
We effectively stole the gold from Ukraine in some sort of clandestine-type operation. And then we've got this whole mercenary killings of bankers going on, it seems to be. Where do you even want to start, man? Where do we begin trying to get this stuff figured out?
And to think you messaged me yesterday saying, hey, this seems like a slow news cycle.
I was being facetious. I always like to pretend that that things are smoothing out because, you know, obviously the hope is that some of this stuff is going to smooth over. But it just seems like it's getting worse and worse every single day and getting less and less predictable, as you know, especially when you get into the precious metals markets now. I mean, anybody say the divergence between paper and physical now is so obvious, it's laughable. You know what I mean?
Correct.
I don't even know where to start. Where do you want to begin, V?
Well, I mean, let's talk about Black Friday that we can aptly rename Red Friday. Let's start with that. Let's talk about the fact that everybody's projection on Black Friday was a major dismal failure.
Yes.
Black Friday, I mean, this is with the, you know, the pre-Black Friday sales for the whole entire week leading up to Black Friday.
Right.
This also includes the flop that is Cyber Monday, and now they have Cyber Monday week.
Right.
So all of this is missing the boat, and what the average Joe on the street needs to recognize, JD, is this. You can't have a successful retail sales cycle when you got over 50% of the country in dire straits. Okay, when you got 50% of Americans making less than $28,000 a year, you got, you know, 101 million on some sort of welfare. You have 92 million permanently out of the workforce. You got 52 million on food stamps. Unless, of course, all these big box retailers start accepting EBT cards,
right,
you know, for payment on non-food merchandise, then that's the only way they're going to stimulate anything in terms of retail sales. Now, this is just compounding, folks. A lot of these retailers have been bleeding out money even before 2008.
Do you remember the story about Radio Shack wanting to close down a number of its stores, but it couldn't raise the capital? Like, it could not physically pull the capital together that it needed to close down stores. That's a startling indication of where we're going here.
Oh, it's terrible. Look at Amazon. Amazon hasn't turned out any sort of a profit. Best Buy is limping along. I like to call Best Buy Amazon.com's showroom.
I like it. Yeah, that's where you go to check out all the stuff that you want to buy on Amazon.
It's a nightmare. Where I go to check out all my stuff that I need to buy on Amazon. And I go to Best Buy and I say, well, here's the price on Amazon. Beat it. Right. And they have to do it. It's a win-win situation. Right. Folks, a business model like that just doesn't work.
So wait, because, you know, when I'm reading this story about the retail sales, you know, maybe I'm naive, but it seems to me that the talking heads on the TV, the Wall Street Journal and all that, they're saying essentially that we all didn't go out and spend a bunch of money because we don't need to save money right now because we have plenty.
Correct. And that's all our fault, JD. You see, it's our problem that we didn't blow money that we didn't have in the first place.
That's
number
right.
One. It's our, that $18 trillion debt limit that was hit, that's our debt as well. And it's all our fault.
Right.
You know, if the American people would have just tightened up their belt buckle and been a little bit more, you know, frugal and then spend the money when they needed to spend it, we'd all be better. And that's the nonsense they like to pull us. Folks, you gotta understand, this debt is not ours. It's the bankster's debt. It's the debt from Wall Street. It's the cronyism and the umbilical cord that runs from D.C. all the way to Wall Street, that is the main problem of this whole entire thing, man. So Black Friday ended up being a Red Friday, and then on top of that, you have the ADP employment numbers, which, again, misses the mark. Why? Because we're in a contracting economy. Folks, let's get this straight here. Okay, we've dealt with the sales side. We dealt with the retail side. Now let's talk about the employment side. How the heck are you going to get any sort of job growth? Now, 50% of Americans are making less than 28 grand a year, $28,000. Most of the jobs that have been added in this quote-unquote job growth that they like to talk about, that the administration likes to talk about, is basically underemployed people or people working low-paying, low-wage jobs. All right? How are you going to have any sort of real jobs when you have an economy that's contracting per year, you know, and the government even admitted to that in somewhat shape or form a few months ago. Hmm. Now, JD, it's pretty amazing also that in lieu of this, and all you have, last time since I've been on, I mean, a couple of weeks ago, the IMF, you know, came out and said, you know what, China is now officially the largest economy in the world. So there's been so many transitions that are happening, and it just goes from bad to worse. I mean, that covers the unemployment thing. Now, look at what happened with you had the assassination of Christophe de Margerie. He's the CEO of Total Petroleum. Okay, he was one of the most level-headed French businessmen out there. He was a close friend of Vladimir Putin. Had a lot of oil deals. Set up energy deal set up with the Russians, and that's going to go kaput because immediately after de Margerie died conveniently in a plane crash, his plane hit a snowplow.
What? Are you serious?
Yeah, dude, serious.
I haven't even heard of
hit
that.
A snowplow, and this is the first week in November.
Right.
His plane hits a snowplow, and in the middle of the night, in the second busiest private airport in all basically all of Eurasia, okay? And you can't write this, okay? Then there was multiple explosions after the plane took off and tried to land. there were multiple explosions, and his engine was thrown 300 yards away from the plane. For all intents and purposes, it's an assassination hit, and the Russians have launched a criminal investigation.
Wow. Okay.
So the guy, Christophe de Margerie, is tied in with the level-headed contrarians that are in the EU, kind of like the American counterpart, so to speak, that say, hey, you know what? Screwing with Russia and hitting in with sanctions is only going to hurt us. And we need to, you know, forget about this whole entire suicide pact we have with the U.S. Mm-hmm. And let's get on with business. Politics is politics, but business is business. So that being said, Christophe gets killed. And then immediately what happens? Well, right after that, you had a string of banker assassinations. You had a Deutsche Bank lawyer who gets hung in his own apartment. Right. You had an Israeli banker connected with Deutsche Bank, who's close friends with Dominique Strauss-Kahn, who happens to be close friends with Christophe de Margerie. He gets thrown out of the 23rd floor window of his apartment.
Wow.
That number has significance there, folks. So, you know, he gets killed. And then about a week and a half ago, you had Sean D. Miller, one of the executives at Citigroup, which back in January of 2013, I said there's going to be a hit on a Citigroup executive. I'm on record with that. I said Citigroup. People ask me because I'm the only guy out there that details the entire banker suicides and shows everybody the length of it, mm-hmm. of how it's all connected. So people are always asking, well, V, who do you think is going to be next? I said, give it time. I'm waiting for a Citigroup executive.
What?
And sure enough, Citigroup executive Sean D. Miller, who is tied in with the World Bank, tied in with a company called IFC, who's involved with land grab frauds with Deutsche Bank, winds up getting his throat slit while sitting in his bathtub in his $5 million New York City apartment.
Because when you think of suicide, you think slitting your throat, especially when you have a $5 million apartment and have enough money to go out and buy, you know, any type of implement that could possibly take your life. You think rusty razor blade to the throat, don't you? I mean,
yeah, that's the first thing that goes to the head.
Right.
You know? And of course, the NYPD rules it a homicide. And, you know, I guarantee you there will be no conclusion to that case. It's going to be a case that's going to be an unsolved murder.
Right.
Nothing's going to come of it. Okay. So that's the thing with Sean D. Miller. And then fast forward to what the Europeans and the Americans have been doing. You have the Odumbo administration. What do? They get rid of Chuck Hagel, the bagel.
Right.
All right. He's out. And all of a sudden, Mr. Odumbo decides to get all hawkish. And he sends over 100 military tanks to the Ukraine. Mm-hmm. At the same time, the EU kleptocrats decide, hey, you know what? Let's just slit our throats. Let's join Sean D. Miller in slitting our own throats. We're going to upstream pipeline. Vladimir Putin's like, okay, fine. You don't want the pipeline? I'm just going to enter a massive pipeline deal with the Turks.
Right.
And not only am I going to enter a massive pipeline deal with the Turks, which happens to be a NATO member, which you guys have been giving them the finger in terms of joining the EU, I'm going to also develop every single nuclear power infrastructure for the Turks and build a nuclear power plant. How do you like them apples? To fall. Because Turkey, that move that Putin did, it did two things. Number one, it officially have taken the Turks, which have been looking for EU membership, and the EU just said, no, you're not European enough. Okay, fine. But all of Ukraine is more European. This is the madness. Okay?
Right, right.
they want Ukraine to be a part of EU and useless countries like Poland. Okay, but they don't want Turkey, which has a viable economy, the ninth most powerful military on the planet. They don't want them. So Putin says, okay, you know what? I'm gonna officially take Turkey off the chessboard. And this is something that guys like myself, a few other pundits, have been talking about for quite some time. We said that Turkey is going to swing east. It's going to happen. Number one, Erdogan is constantly disrespected by Odumbo.
Right.
Odumbo doesn't return any of his phone check on him. Odumbo doesn't do nothing for this guy.
Mm-hmm.
So Erdogan's like, why are we even bothering with the U.S.? Why are we even using the United States dollar? So with that being said, Putin has taken away a major chess piece and is bringing it into the Eastern Fold.
Okay, well, I gotta stop you real quick though, because this to me leads to a question, because we had a story that came out yesterday where DW, which is a fairly large newspaper in Germany, actually has some video evidence of Turkey allowing all of these transport vehicles of weapons and funding and stuff directly going into ISIS. You know, we're talking about NATO-controlled border of Turkey, wide open, supplying ISIS right now. So if NATO is working, obviously, with Turkey and or Turkey is working with NATO and the United States to fund ISIS, that seems like a very, very significant, you know, counterposition to what you're saying. You know what I mean? Like, if they're working with NATO, but then Russia is going to bring them into the fold in the EU, how is that going to affect their NATO membership?
Well, NATO is going to be officially null and void. It's going to be dead very soon. The entire shipments of ISIS men and materiel going into Turkey is going to stop, because what's happening is Turkey has been, you know, biting the – Turkey does not like ISIS. Okay, they're working on the premise, the enemy of my enemies is my friend. The Turks have a lot of beef with the Syrians, and that's going to be sorted out under the whole, you know, Russian, Chinese.
Okay, okay.
He said, look at what Turkey has done to ISIS in the northern Iraqi, northern Syrian territories. You know, ISIS's biggest problem right now that they're facing, the quote-unquote caliphate that they've created out of nowhere, is water shortages. Why? Why are they having water? Turks have cut off the main dam to the ISIS rebel fighters and their caliphate because they don't want to support them. And now the ISIS members, some of the leaders are saying, well, if that dam doesn't turn back on, then we're going to go all the way to Istanbul and tell Erdogan to turn it back on. We're going to – we'll be in Istanbul. Well, right. Good luck with that. I mean, the is that – and that'll never happen. You know, so the issue here is that the Turks do not like you know, ISIS at all.
Okay.
But they're putting up with it because of their longstanding ties with NATO, their longstanding ties with the U.S., and that's going to shift because there's going to be a purge coming in the Turkish military. It's going to happen. It's going to happen very quickly and swiftly.
Hmm.
A lot of the NATO lackeys and the U.S. lackeys that love the dollar money bags that are being thrown at them by the U.S. and NATO, they're going to be ousted.
Okay.
Shift that is beginning in Turkey that's going to be so profound. And the Turks have, even though they're putting up with the U.S. on one end, let's talk about what they're doing on the back end. Well, they cut off water, number one. Number two, they were intimately involved, thumbing their nose at the U.S. and the EU by buying Iranian oil and paying for it in gold. Okay? That's a huge scandal. So why did, you know, the Turks are doing that? They were working that oil pipeline deal with the Russians for quite some time,
right,
as well as, you know, yuan currency swaps with the Chinese that are being worked on as well. So all these things, allowing some men and materiel through their borders into ISIS, but the grand scheme of things of where they're putting their eggs in the basket is in a very anti-U.S., anti-NATO, anti-EU platform, that basket. That's where they're putting it all. So it's pretty interesting to see this whole thing, this whole, you know, ISIS supplying and shipments to be cut very shortly and very soon. It's the same play that Saudi Arabia is doing. They're mouthing to the U.S., okay, fine, we'll cut oil prices. We're going to hurt the Russians. No, we're going to kill U.S. shale oil industry and the natural gas industry right here in the United States.
Yeah,
that's what's going to happen.
The prince came out and said that just yesterday. He said, we're not going to cut any of our supply unless Iran, Russia, and the United States agree to do the same thing, which means, I mean, that's lockstep. We're not going to get away from these prices at this point.
No, not at all.
So, okay, what is this? Here's my question then, because I keep hearing this, the magic shale oil number. Is it 60? Yeah. Is it 70? Is it 80? Does anybody even know? 60 bucks.
Yeah, so 60 bucks.
If we're above 60, then the shale industry will be okay or what?
Yeah, it'll be hurting, but it'll be okay. But we get to like 60 or below 60, then we're totally screwed at that point. Shale, which is a very expensive for, number one. And number two, it doesn't have the energy potential that crude does. Crude is much more energy dense than shale oil. So at below $60 a barrel, it's not even viable. It's not even profitable for any company to do any sort of exploration or any sort of digging. Drilling. At that point, it's going to see layoffs, North Dakota shutting down, Texas turning into a wasteland, the Marcellus Shale that runs to PA to New York, that's going to be a no man's land. It's going to kill a tremendous amount of jobs and industries that are dependent upon this whole entire shale oil network, to stay viable. So that's what's going to happen. The Russians have seen this coming from 10 miles away. So they said, okay, fine, you want to take it down to $30 a barrel? Who cares? We're not using dollars to sell our oil. We're going to just gold and yuan and rubles. And that's the move they're making. Mm-hmm. At the same time, the Russians and the Chinese are moving in lockstep to not only stabilize the ruble. I mean, look what happened. The EU announced nobody could buy Russian bonds. It hurt the Russian bond market. It also hurt the ruble. So what did the Chinese do? They stepped in and started buying ruble bonds. Huh. They stepped in to stabilize the ruble. You see, people don't understand that the dragon and the bear is walking in lockstep together. They're going to win. Now they got Turkey on their side. Oil prices, these low oil prices, guess who's benefiting the heck of a lot most with these oil prices? The Chinese.
Why is that?
Well, oil, they're the number one energy consumer on the planet.
Okay.
Okay. They consume more oil than the United States and Great Britain combined. So they're going to go ahead and they are taking advantage of these low oil prices and they're stockpiling oil as much as they can. They're stockpiling it. They're putting it away for a rainy day. And then on top of that, Europe and America are talking about sanctions, the Russians are busy buying tons and tons and tons of gold. So they're ready for this battle, okay? So on top of that, even taking it one step further, the Chinese, the ruble, you have the stockpiling oil, and then the oil deal with the Russians. Do you think for one second, JD, and for the audience, that Putin cares that if he loses Europe at this point? He needed Crimea. He got Crimea out of the Ukraine.
Right.
Rest of Ukraine could go rot in hell for all he cares. Okay. Because the simple fact that Crimea and all the drilling rights, natural gas shale, happens to be right off the coast of Crimea that he has the rights to, and he has a naval base there that he secures.
Yeah, exactly.
Beautifully. Well played. Mm-hmm. Now, do you think that Putin is going to stress about his European market, the EU market, which is dying, which is killed itself with the Russian sanctions, which has about 450,000 jobs and over 6,000 companies dependent on Russian economy, dependent on Russian trade. So if anything gets hammered, I mean, already for going along with the stupid sanction nonsense, okay?
Right.
The French, the real industrialists in French, in France are hopping mad because that moron, the Obama, the Odumbo of France, President Francois Hollande, the socialist idiot, decided to cancel the Mistral deal. And the stipulations on the Mistral deal with the French, the Russians have stated that if you cannot deliver, we're going to collect back our money plus interest. So now there are billions in the hole. They have a couple of thousand jobs that are just about to evaporate because, they built these amphibious assault ships for the Russians. Mm-hmm. They've built a whole, parts and supply business around those ships. Mm-hmm. They've built employment of French citizens and French soldiers who are going to train the Russians on how to operate all this stuff. And now that's all gone thanks to pressure from the U.S. So the Russians have effectively said, JD, okay, you guys want a suicide pact? Fine. Freeze to death, all of you together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and yeah. Now the so the Russians don't care if they lose the European market. Why? Because they have the hot, boiling over markets in the East and the Far East. They got Chinese. They got the Vietnamese. They got the Indians. They got the Iranians. They got South Korea. They got Taiwan. They got Japan. Japan's coming on board on a pipeline deal with the Russians. They got all these things going on. Who cares if they lose a bunch of deadbeat Europeans? Who cares if they lose a bunch of broke nations, members who are part of the Insolvent Seven, formerly known as the G7? Right. Who cares? So now EU effectively entered a suicide pact with the United States, effectively. Mm-hmm. You know, so now they're all going down together.
Well, it's starting to seem like the seams are starting to show quite a bit in the EU. You know, you've got Italy saying maybe we want to have a – maybe we want to go back to the old lira and have that kind of on the side as a plan just in case. And then you've got Germany saying, you know, these sanctions with Russia – really not working out super great for us. Maybe we should start. So you're starting to see some of the individual EU members really kind of starting to backpedal. And I'm wondering what's going to happen with that going forward? Do you think we're going to see more instances of that?
Oh, my God, yes.
I mean, is the EU going to fall apart?
Without a doubt, the EU as it stands right now, if it doesn't fall apart, then the people are that lost. You know, these are Europeans who like to protest when the bus fare goes up a nickel.
Right.
They should be, you know, they should be, if they're not out in the streets over this stuff, then the EU is going to just absolutely go turn into a failed supranational state, you know. Mm-hmm. Look at, and here's the deal. You know, I told you before that the Saudis are in a whole heap of trouble. They're running out of energy. And the last time when I was on the show, I kind of detailed that briefly. Mm-hmm. They're in a whole heap of trouble. So the Saudis are playing two sides at the same time. In terms of, okay, fine. We'll cut the oil price. We'll increase the production of oil to drop the prices to hurt the Russians. Yeah, we'll do that. Right. But you know, the Saudis themselves know that they have to do something because they have a lot of internal turmoil. They have a good amount of Shi'i minorities that live there that are causing a lot of trouble. The king, Abdullah Allah, he's about to die. He's 89 years old.
Okay.
None of the princes are fit enough to, you know, none of the first generation princes are fit enough to take the throne. Okay. It's going to go to the third generation princes, which are the younger loyalties that their fathers had. So these guys know that the energy in the kingdom, the energy structure is falling apart because their wells are pumping water at this point. So they got to do something. So what does Saudi Arabia do? Well, they're getting in bed with the Russians and the Chinese as well. In fact, if you look at Saudis suggested today, right? Mm-hmm. The Saudi Arabians, you know, suggested today that, you know what, we see oil. You know, if oil drops below 30 or 40 or 50 bucks, they're in a whole heap of trouble. The kingdom implodes. Okay. They can't let that happen. So the Saudis are saying, okay, do we kill ourselves and join a suicide pact with the, or do we be smart about it and ensure the survival of the kingdom?
Mm-hmm.
Well, today, here's a little clue, JD. A couple of the Saudi heads have come forward and said, we see oil stabilizing at around, 60 bucks.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So
there's that magic number.
There's that magic number again. All right, we've got to go take a quick 3-minute break. Thank you very much for being here, ladies and gentlemen. We're speaking, of course, with V the Gorilla Economist today of RogueMoney.net. We're going to take a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back. Keep it here, guys.
So, you want the news and information without the hate, the hype, the fear? Well, you've come to the right place. You can support Truth Frequency Radio by spreading the word on social networking sites like Facebook, Twitter, or your favorite forums. Want to take Truth Frequency Radio on the road? Listen on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or other mobile devices. Want more than just the free stuff? Sign up for a VIP membership for as little as $4 a month and get super high-quality downloads, member-only content, and instant access to your favorite shows without the wait. It's only through your loving support that we're able to cover the cost and continue broadcasting. So now, stay tuned for more Free Speech Radio right here on the Truth Frequency Radio Network. KTFRN. Worldwide.
American gardeners and fellow patriots, make the right choice with your money, time, and your family food supply. Choose 100% pure heirloom seeds in the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. Why spend more? The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com is only $37.95 and includes 20 varieties of pure, hardy, easy-to-grow heirloom seeds. Yes, only $37.95. That's 70% less than our competitors. You could buy three Survival Seed Vaults for less than one of theirs. The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com includes detailed planting and seed saving instructions and ships same day. Plus, all orders over $49 ship free. MyPatriotSupply.com is American owned by patriots like you, passionate about freedom and preparedness. Call now, 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness items when you order at MyPatriotSupply.com. Choose the original. Choose the Survival Seed Vault at MyPatriotSupply.com.
Since our founding in 2005, we at YouTube have continually strived to bring you the best possible video experience on the internet. But now, we're updating YouTube to make it even better and give our users more of what they want.
Ever since our Google Plus integration, we've seen a 30% reduction in racist and bigoted comments. People are even starting to notice the complete lack of bigoted comments, and frankly, they miss them. To make up for this deficit, we have added auto-commenting bots to YouTube Plus that can be set to either type racist or hateful comments. Similar to the auto-comment bot, we've created the auto-spam bot, which allows terrible YouTubers to beg people to watch their horrible excuses for videos they put out. These comments can go out to every video they've ever interacted with.
Hey guys! So we're like really wanting to be filmmakers on YouTube, and we'd totes appreciate it if you come watch our videos and comment, like, and subscribe. That'd be totes amazeballs. Yeah, we really like subscribers.
YouTube Plus. We own you!
This is London calling on Longwave.
The Chris Everard Show. Sundays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. It is straight up 11:30 Central Time right now, and we are knee-deep in a discussion with V, the Gorilla Economist, and we were just talking about Saudi Arabia being in trouble, and you had some insight about some of the leaders of Saudi Arabia coming out this morning and saying essentially that they're going to keep oil down at that $60 a barrel level.
Yep.
And I think I want to come back to the idea of the shale industry here in the United States, because I really want you to try and put this into perspective for people that, you know, obviously the $60 mark is a pretty significant number for them in terms of the shale industry. But what are your predictions? Say we stay at that $60 mark. Obviously, it's not going to be a total collapse of the shale, but it's going to make it very, very unprofitable. It's going to obviously have a lot of effect on the number one industry that we have in our country right now, which is energy. So could you maybe outline some predictions? Just say for like the next 3 to 6 months, what we could expect to see here in the United States if oil does happen to stay down at that 60 level. Obviously, we're in conjecture mode here, but I'm just curious about what your thoughts are going forward.
Well, what I initially see is this. I mean, oil will dip before the end of the year, and I predicted this months ago. I'm on record with it, that it's going to dip below $70 before the year ends. And it's on track to do that. I firmly believe that. And I believed, and I was the first to actually put it out there, that oil by next summer of 2015 is going to be anywhere between $30 to $40 a barrel.
Wow.
Now, the question is, what will Saudi Arabia going to do? Well, Saudi Arabia knows this, and they are going to insulate themselves by getting the heck out of the dollar. They're not going to go along with the petrodollar scheme at that point. Okay. And they're going to have to get into some sort of an energy union with the Russians, with the Qataris, that's going to stabilize them. $30 to $40 oil next year is, well, right now, if it's a 60 bucks, what's going to happen is that a lot of the things that happen with the shale oil industry is that you have a lot of natural gas that comes along with that, with the drilling for the oil.
Okay.
This, you know, we have a cold winter like we had last year, which, you know, I think we probably will. Mm-hmm. It's temporary boost. So it's not going to kill the industry. But once we get out of that winter season and we get into the summer with falling oil prices, that's it, man. JD, that's it. That's going to be the nail on the coffin for country, and it's going to put a further stress on our economy. I mean, it's going to be pretty tremendous. I mean, with the low oil prices, we've seen certain food items, you know, drop in price because it's gotten cheaper to transport.
Right.
So, you know, going into next summer, I think things are going to look bad.
What about like hedge funds? I know that a lot of hedge funds are tied into oil futures and things like that. Are there situations where if the oil price gets so low that hedge funds are automatically, you know, the computers are going to kick on and then people are going to start getting out of the market, you know, because statistically they have to, you know, and is that going to potentially cause some other spillover into the economy?
Yeah, I mean, it's happening now. I mean, when you look at the recent plummeting of oil and how much sell-offs in oil stocks happened in just a move from $100 to $80.
Right.
And then from 80 to 70, there is a panic already. So you can imagine if we have a price drop down to 60 and then to 40 or 30, I mean, I think once it starts getting below 60, all bets are off at that point. And I think there's going to be a mad flight out of oil. See, JD, is this oil at $30 to $60? What's happening also is that people are not utilizing dollars to get it, so it's that much.
Oh, so the causal effect. Then we're seeing the slowing of the velocity of money. Then too.
Bingo.
Okay.
Bingo. It's less, you know, less dollars in order to buy oil. So that means it's less dollars that are being used. It's less demand for dollars. And yet, you know, with all this going on, indexes at an all-time high.
Right, which is crazy. But if you think about that, see, that's why I think this whole thing is rigged and controlled.
Oh, totally.
Because look at what now China and Russia are able to do with that high dollar index, even if they – okay, say they're buying oil in gold. They're obviously able to buy a commodity right now for less because the price of oil has come down. But yeah. if they're you know, have an inkling that they want to get out of the dollar, well, now's a really good time to liquidate your stockpile of dollars, get into oil at a low price or get into gold at a low price, right? And
yep.
then call it a day, I guess.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then this morning, this morning you had reports coming in that over 100 tanks have been sent to the eastern Ukraine border to deter any sort of Russian aggression.
Stupid.
I mean, really dumb.
Dude, it's 1940s technology. I'm just going to go out on a limb here and say essentially what we're doing is we're providing fodder for drone strike training for Russia and China and whoever else wants to get involved. There's no reason to go put 1940s technology out into a field for no reason. It's just ludicrous. It's ludicrous.
Exactly. It's going to make a very good news story. American tanks destroyed in a matter of minutes.
Yes.
And that's going to really make the U.S. look bad because people don't realize a military defense is going to be really bad for the United States, especially with the petrodollar. And people will say, well, wait, why is that important? Well, the petrodollar simply exists by one thing and one thing alone, that the free flow of oil as well as goods will be maintained by the power and the might of the United States military. That's the whole cornerstone on which the whole thing is built.
Right.
But if the United States military appears to be weak and ineffective, the point of the petrodollar. That's the reason why the Chinese are sailing warships up into the Strait of Hormuz. We can protect you. Look at us. You don't have to be bullied by the U.S. We'll protect you. And not only can we protect the free shipping lanes, and that's why the last few years, the Chinese have been heavily Somali pirates. And they don't even mince words. They just blow them out of the water.
Really?
Okay. So they're flexing their muscles, man. The same thing with the Russian Navy. Their military is being modernized in a rapid, rapid clip. So, you know, things are not going to bode well, man. They have armaments to which we have no defenses for at this point.
I want to talk about that a little bit because I think there's a lot of conjecture about that out there as well. You know, I know you've got a lot of sources that are kind of high up, confidential kind of stuff. But what do we know really or what do you know really about Russia's true military capability and China's true military capability? I mean, are they really kind of snowing us on here with pretending that their B-2 bombers are still relevant? Because I don't see that being reality anymore. You know.
Well, you know, I did some work for a think tank that's based in Texas, and that should give away a lot of information right there. But I'll tell you that. Know a lot of this military hardware stuff and you know, for me to do my analysis work.
Okay.
But when you look at, let's just say, in terms of missiles, the Russians and the Chinese are a generation ahead of us. And people are like, well, what do you mean, V? Well, the Russians have cruise missiles that can hit hypersonic or sub-hypersonic speed. They can do erratic maneuvers right before impact. What do we have? We just have a Tomahawk cruise missile that was designed in the 70s.
Okay.
The Russians and the Chinese have the most deadliest anti. They fly at Mach 7, 50 to 60 feet above water. They do erratic maneuvers right before impact. We have no defense against them, for our ships. Which is a missile designed in the 70s.
Right.
Okay. The Russians have developed a new that travels about, I think, 430 miles per hour underwater.
What?
And does, yes, and does erratic maneuvers before impact. What do we have? Well, we have our torpedoes and its technology that was developed that do about, 40 or 50 knots underwater.
Right.
From the 70s. So. Then we'll talk about aircraft, right? This one I love. People are like, well, we've got the greatest aircraft. No, we don't. The F-22 above 22,000 feet is useless because it'll wind it out because of bad oxygen sensors. Number two, look at red flag.
Got to stop for a second. Were those oxygen sensors perhaps provided by China? Okay, just saying. Right. Just saying. Right. Just throwing that out there. Okay.
And look at red flag. Look at the red flag exercises in China. In Alaska a couple of months back, almost a year ago, where you had German Eurofighters engaging in a dogfight with the F-22 fighters, the Typhoons. They shredded the F-22.
Really?
Shredded it. Oh yeah, couldn't escape. It's up close. The F-22 is useless. Okay. Mm-hmm. Then you have the F-35, which is a flying pig. It can't turn, it's not fast enough, doesn't have the range, and has a radar signature that can blow it out of the sky. It's a horrible plane. It's a money pit, which is what it's designed to be because Lockheed is in a whole heap of trouble. They're on the verge of bankruptcy, and that's the dirty secret that nobody knows and nobody's really talking about.
Are you serious? Lockheed's on the verge of bankruptcy?
Oh, yep. Them and immediate 30,000 jobs in Lockheed are an
immediate
secret. Yep, absolutely. So – another exercise that shows you the futility of American military power is this. In 2008, we had the COPE India exercises, where the United States Air Force decided to take their best and brightest and fly over to India to put on a show for the Indian who's the best. Well, the Indians showed up to the game with the SU-33 MKI. If anybody wants to go Google that, it's a real badass plane.
Right.
It's the SU-33 MKI. Which is basically the Russian Sukhoi flanker derivative, and it has Israeli, Indian, and French avionics in there.
Ooh, that's fierce looking.
Oh man, it's a bad plane.
Yeah, that's fierce looking. Roger that. Okay.
The kill ratio during the dogfighting and the air to air exercises was 8-1 in favor of the Indians. That means for every one Indian aircraft that the Americans have shot down, the Indians shot down 8 U.S. aircraft.
Oh my goodness.
So. Then we fast forward even more, JD, and decided to run a computer simulation in which NATO members such as Australia were invited to watch the simulation.
Okay.
The simulation was over about 250 or so, or 243 F-35s facing against Chinese J-11, which are, again, Russian Sukhoi J-11s. Sukhoi SU-33s, Sukhoi SU-35 super flankers.
Okay.
Well, the Australian observers are watching the simulation put on by the RAND Corporation said, as the only out of the 240-some-odd F-35s that were sent up there to face the Chinese and the Russians, only 30 made it back to base.
Are you serious?
Correct. The Australians have said it was like watching, they said watching the whole thing, it was like watching, it was like clubbing. The Australian said it was like clubbing baby seals.
Oh, that bolsters the confidence, doesn't it?
And folks, let me tell you something. The terminology called stealth, ooh, it's stealth, invisible to radar. It's a marketing term. There's really no such thing. You have what's called low observable. It doesn't make it invisible to radar. In fact, I can track an F using a long wave radar, the same type that they've used in the Battle of Britain.
Oh,
you
wow.
can find an F-35. It's the same long-wave radar that that guy in order to find an F-117 Nighthawk and shoot it down out of the air.
Mm.
It's the same thing. So stealth nomenclature and fifth generation and all, you know, aircraft, all this stuff, it's just marketing terminology. Then you want to go into the tank area. We have the M1A1 Abrams as a tried-and-true tested battlefield piece of equipment. But what are you going to do against drones? What are you going to do against air superiority? What are you going to do
exactly.
against a T-95, which can shoot a missile out of its turret?
Yeah, I mean, it's useless. It's absolutely useless. And that's I guess, where I'm going with all of this is my question now becomes, I mean, obviously, with as much money as we've invested into the military-industrial complex and as much lobbying takes place at the behest of Boeing and Lockheed and Northrop Grumman and Raytheon and all these huge, huge, huge corporations that are building these machines, obviously, they employ people in industrial espionage. You know, we're all adults here. We can all obviously talk. We know that the spy industry has been active since before World War I, really. And so this whole thing has got to be a setup, right? I mean, if there's got to be a reason that our military technology has been purposely led astray and yeah. made to lag behind, don't you think?
Oh, well, it's as if the test and the finished product is actually made by the Chinese and the Russians these days. Mm-hmm. It's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
It's exactly what it is. I mean, you look at the F-22, you're like, wow, the aircraft, you start seeing the weakness, and you're like, wait a minute, what's with all the weakness? Then you see the Russian T-50. If anybody wants to Google a bad airplane, look at the Russian T-50, the PAK-FA T-50. That is an amazing aircraft. There you see the absolute finished product of what an F-22 should look like. And then you look at the Chinese J-20, which is their it's basically a re-engineered, if anybody remembered back in the 90s, Europe had a plane that they were competing against the F-22 for. It was called the YF-23 Black Widow, which is one of my favorite airplanes of all time. The YF-23 was a superior plane to the F-22. It was faster. It had more maneuverability, had carried more fuel, had better armaments. I mean, that thing to get. But they somehow chose the lesser, which was the F-22.
Hmm.
Look at the Chinese J-11. It is the YF-23 reincarnated. Okay.
Right.
So it's like we're making the beta stuff, and the Chinese and the Russians get the finished stuff. Look at the Chinese, I think it's called the J-35, which is looks like something like the F-35 should have been, or the thing is called the J-31 or something.
Okay.
But that's the whole point here. We're making this crappy stuff that barely works, but it looks flashy, mm-hmm. and then the Chinese and the Russians are actually having the more effective version of the aircraft that we – or the concept we've worked on. So it's incredible, JD. It really is.
It is, too. And you think about, these are the same people that are pushing us towards this war. I mean, they are literally setting us up for failure at this point.
Yeah, they definitely are. And they need to stage. Okay, and I'm going to tell people a little insider thing. For those that don't know, and I was talking to very high up there in the intelligence community, who's basically two steps removed from the elite banking families.
Okay.
So very high-ranking individual. People that don't know this. First of all, let me just say that the Gorilla is a major fan of motorsports. I love all forms of motorsports. I love fast cars. I've driven fast cars. I race fast cars. So the Gorilla loves Formula One. I follow Formula One whenever I can.
Okay.
I just found out that Formula One also happens to be the sport of choice for the elites because it is a billionaire's playground, number one.
Hmm.
Number two, it is their version of modern day racehorses, and Formula One is practically the closest thing you're going to get to space technology, but for the ground.
Okay.
So the latest Formula One race that happened was the championship race in Abu Dhabi at the Yas Marina Circuit, which if anybody wants to see a beautiful, oh my God, the Yas Marina Circuit is gorgeous. Okay. So at the Yas Marina Circuit, you had Formula One provides the perfect cover for a lot of these elites to start flying in and discuss what the heck they're going to be doing.
Oh, okay.
And so they've discussed that they've decided that they're going to stage and start begin stages for a major global. And what my intelligence sources have told me is that you can expect a false flag, not in the United States, but in the time between January and February of 2015. The propensity of that occurring is very high. Okay, can things change? Yes.
Right.
For having the crisis in the Middle East, and you got to remember, folks, ISIS is there for a reason. It's a CIA creation. Mm-hmm. It is there to serve a purpose. And the purpose is supposed to be that they're going to do something so atrocious that it's going to that people will be calling for boots on the ground to end
madness.
Okay, because you got ISIS who are beheading men, women, and children, who are doing the most heinous acts. They're raping men, and they put out like pancake recipes on Twitter. I mean, right. What the heck?
Right?
I mean, I kid you not. So this is ISIS. Okay, this is something's not right with these guys. So they're there for a reason. And their reason is to provide the pretext to get boots on the ground, to get men and This is the same thing, JD, we did with the Korean War. After the Korean War, all the equipment, all the material that's needed to fight a war, they didn't, you know, throw it out or recycle it. No, they put it in the Mariana. They've hid it in various islands throughout the Pacific and on the West Coast and in Alaska. And then when the false flag, which is called the Gulf of Tonkin, occurred, all of a sudden you had all this American men and material just appear out of nowhere, so to speak. Okay?
Right,
so
right.
We were staging for Vietnam. So now we're staging again. We're going to begin staging again for a Middle Eastern conflict and possibly some sort of a spillover into Eastern Europe. And this will be against the Russians and the Chinese.
Hmm.
You know, will we see like a complete nuclear conflagration of the continent of the United States? No. But it's going to be – look, the Russians and the Chinese need to send a message. They're sending the message that, number one, and first and foremost, folks, the BRICS.
Right.
Nations of the BRICS have a bigger GDP than the seven nations of the G7, mm-hmm. which I like to call the insolvent seven. So they don't need the G7 anymore. So now they need to put the exclamation mark on the end of this statement, and that is with some sort of a war that absolutely embarrasses. And, you know, I've talked about it over a year ago with my intel sources, and I think we're heading in that direction, JD.
That's interesting. Well, I know, and I've got indications that Israel has been trying to fracture, Iraq into three parts since the early 80s. There's been a lot of people in our administration that have gone on point with that as well, saying that that was one of the desired intentions there. But with so many key players in that area, I mean, you've got Israel, you've got Saudi Arabia, you've got Iran, and then you basically have China and Russia kind of and Turkey now watching over the whole thing. I'm trying to figure out which player is going to be the one to provide the false flag and which, you know, how they're going to frame that, so to speak. That's just a really interesting idea, you know.
Oh, man, there's so many triggers to this thing. It could start in a myriad and it could end with the outcome, no matter how it ends.
Right.
It's going to be the loss of preeminence of the United States.
I want to bounce back to this conversation we were having about the true technological, you know, military capability.
Oh, sure.
I had an email question come in. Somebody is curious about space-based stuff. Do you have any indication about, you know, space or even that USS Cook incident that supposedly happened? Was that real? That kind of stuff.
Yes, that was an energy array weapon that was used on the USS Cook. It was completely shut down. From what I heard, the strategy was they had a, if anybody wants to look this up, look up TU-160 Blackjack, which basically is the finished version of what the B-1B should have been.
Okay.
The Blackjack was, flying, you know, a couple miles out from where the Cook was, but then you also had an SU-24, Fencer, which is the Russian version of the F-111 Aardvark.
Okay.
Which happens to be one of my favorite planes, the F-111, but, so the SU-24, the Blackjack hit the Cook with an energy weapon, and the SU-24 was zipping for 90 minutes in front of the cook, simulating bombing runs.
It did like 12 bombing runs. And I think 22 service members on that boat actually went to their superiors and they said, thank you, but no thank you. We'd like to go home now.
Yep, exactly. So the message was loud and clear. So they have that energy weapon. They have space-based weapons as well. They have lasers. They have, believe it or not, my KGB source said they have tractor beam weapons where they can literally pull asteroids and pull it off off orbit. How all that stuff works, I don't know. But they have energy-based weapons. You see, the Russians have always played around with Tesla's work that Tesla laid out, and they knew that the world is all about energy, and so they have it, man. They absolutely have it, and they probably have it more so than us, because you got to understand the goal. Because at some level, at one level, all of these players are working for the same group.
Right.
We've had a lot of our technology handed over to the Russians and the Chinese. So, we're being set up to fail, man. That's what this whole thing looks like.
But you think that is initially going to happen someplace in the Middle East, though, not necessarily here.
Yeah, that's the jump off point. Okay. And this is what Albert Pike's letter to Manzini was talking about and all these other things. The Middle East is going to be the main focal point of attrition.
Wow. Well, and that's interesting, too, because I'm sure you heard the news that Israel decided to dissolve its parliament late last night, only 2 years after their last. Yeah. Netanyahu fired a couple of ministers, decided that he didn't like all the bickering that was going on inside the parliament. He didn't like the idea that other people in the parliament might have different political agendas, different than him. And actually, he said exactly that almost verbatim. He said, I'm tired of there being opposition inside of the military or inside of the government. So we're going to fire everybody and then hold another election, which is to me like going full Sauron, isn't it?
I mean, oh, my God. It's he went full Odumbo.
Yeah. Yeah, which is par for the course because we're paying for them. So I guess it all makes sense. V, we're just about out of time. We got about 2 minutes left. I want to encourage everybody, obviously, to check out your website at roguemoney.net and give the information on your show just one more time, if you would.
Sure. The show's Friday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on freedomslips.com, Revolution Radio. The website is roguemoney.net. It is a membership-only site. We break a lot of the news stories, $2.99 a month. I mean, it's a joke. that's about it. You can follow me on Twitter at The Rogue Money. That's on Twitter.
All right, man. Well, I gotta say it's been a very informative discussion. I look forward to having you on again. I hope that things start to smooth over so we don't have quite so much to talk about next time, but I doubt
it
be the case. But I do appreciate you being here and just want to thank you again for stopping by today, sir.
Definitely, JD. It's my pleasure. It's always fun, brother.
Oh, you too, man. I hope to, as I said, hope to do this again and with
anytime
regularity. Awesome. Ladies and gentlemen, that's pretty much about it for the show today. I do want to let everybody know that tomorrow our guest is going to be Dr. Richard Allen Miller. Now, this is a very, very interesting man. He was a pioneer in metaphysical and paranormal exploration. He actually began work in kind of the X-Files world of Navy intel back in the late 60s. We're talking about we're going to have all kinds of metaphysical type, paranormal type discussions. He's also one of the original Black Op team members. So this is going to be a very interesting discussion. I hope you guys will all join us again at 11 o'clock tomorrow for that. But that is pretty much it for the day. Want to thank everybody again for checking out roguemoney.net. V has got an amazing bit of insight for everybody there. Highly recommend people check that out. People keep coming back to the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast. We're going to be here again tomorrow. Same time. Same thing. Radio. You guys have a wonderful day. Take care, everybody.
The Apple's iPhone 5S has been very successful in the US, but we realize that people here in India cannot afford the iPhone. That's why we've decided to work closely with the Apples to bring the iPhone experience to India. We call it the iPhone 5X. The iPhone 5X was built with advanced new hardware. The phone runs on the new Apple's A10 Snapdragon 7870 HD 2-liter turbo Galaxy 29 GHz processor. Our advanced operating system features some of the best apps out there. We have classics such as Instant Gram, Samosa Crush Saga, World of Duty, Call of Warcraft, and Temple Run, in which you get to run from an actual mob of Hindu priests.
And to wrap it all up, we have 24/7 customer service lines in case you idiots need help with your new iPhonies.
Hello, welcome to iPhoney Tech Support. This is Ben Katesh.
Are you sure you're not one of those outsourced white people?